You're listening to the European Tour Race to Dubai show with Dan Roebuck and Kim Thomas.
Welcome to this week's show as we look back on Brandon Stone winning the Aberdeen Standard Investment Scottish Open with an extraordinary final round score to secure his place at the Open Championship.
Really surreal, I think. Our caddy team were managed to convince me to go back to the good old blade putter, put it in the bag and just putted phenomenally the entire week. Hit it nicely today, and any time that you shoot a 60, you know you haven't done anything too badly.
Eddie Pepperell was supposed to be commentating at Carnoustie next week, but finishing runner-up at Gullen earns him a spot playing in the Open, meaning he'll have to postpone his mic duties for another time.
Yeah, well maybe if they want me to do the Ryder Cup, then I'll consider that. And then if I make that team, then, well, I don't know what I'll promise after that. Maybe the diving at the next Olympics or something.
We'll let you know who else earned the final qualifying places for Carnoustie, and we'll, of course, preview the showcase events of the European Tour calendar, the 147th Open Championship. Hello, I'm Dan Roebuck, and I'm joined by commentator and former European Tour golfer Kim Thomas. Kim, how are you?
I'm very fine, Dan. Nice to be back.
It is. It's been a long time between drinks for us two, isn't it?
Certainly.
Can't remember the last time that we did this together.
It's your round.
It is my round. It's always my round. Now then, Gullen, the course record broken twice on Friday, and then Brandon Stone breaks it again in his final round to win the Aberdeen Standard Investment Scottish Open by 4 strokes. It was an incredible score. It could have been better with that putt on the last, but he's going to be pleased with the 60. He has to be over the moon with the 60.
That little 8-footer at the last, he'll remember that for a long time, won't he, the 25-year-old. His first win outside of South Africa, important to him psychologically, coming on the eve of the Open as well. That eagle at 16 was massive.
It was a huge score, wasn't it? It was a fantastic performance. What I thought we saw over the course of the 4 days, with changeable weather, with the course set up as it was, we saw players come from way off the pace to get themselves in position. The scoreboard changed an awful lot on Saturday, I thought. And then again on Sunday, it was quite compact. And there was always a chance that someone could come from off the pace to win.
It was always going to be a low-scoring event as well, with the running fairways. And they're fairly generous, the fairways there too. So it's all about the putting. And of course, he produced the goods, didn't he?
It was set up a little bit differently to what we're going to see when we talk about Carnoustie a little bit later on in the show, because it wasn't as vicious as Open Championship venues can be. And I guess the European Tour wants that, don't they?
Yes, they want a balance, don't they? I mean, Gullen's been an Open Championship qualifying venue many times. It's a great course, but a very different style, as you say, from Carnoustie, as they call it.
Carnoustie, as it has been in the past, and we'll talk about the Open in depth a little bit later on. In terms of the final round, Eddie Pepperell got to the front, and I thought he was going to go on and win. He looked to be in great shape, but just when he needed to kick on over the final 4 holes, I think the failure to birdie the par 5 16th and then the bogey that came off the back of it really did for Eddie. At that stage, we didn't know that Brandon was going to do exactly what he was going to do, but you just felt the wheels were coming off then.
Yeah, he's an inspirational player, is Eddie, with a great fan following as well, and a great blogger, isn't he?
He's good on Twitter as well, isn't he? You've got to follow Eddie on Twitter, he's good.
Yeah, but that 3-putt was really sad, a total misread with the first putt and then perhaps lack of concentration or nerves on the second.
In terms of the players who started the final round in pole position, Jens Dantorp, not one on the European Tour, and with the quality of the field just below him and the fact that players were coming from off the pace, it was always going to be difficult for him, wasn't it, to get the job done?
Oh, yeah, uncharted territory for the man. I mean, he was a very good Challenge Tour player, a Challenge Tour graduate, in fact, and he'll come back.
No doubt about that. It was a good effort from the Swede. He was the overnight leader, of course. But there were no fewer than 17 players within 3 shots of the lead going into that final round. We'll talk about one or two of the other ones. Russell Knox has been in great form, of course. Second in France, then he wins in Ireland. Was he running on fumes a little bit, do you think, going into this week? And although he played well, again, his play faltered down the stretch yesterday.
Yeah, experienced player and a little older than the average players in the field. So I think you're right. He probably ran out of steam a little bit. But I think he's got a good chance next week at the Open Championship.
He is a very good player. People forget about that. Do you think that Russell Knox, if he can put up a top 5 performance in the Open Championship, he's going to come into Ryder Cup calculations? Is he there already?
I think he's right on the fringe, on the bubble, as they say. I think he's got a great chance, but it might depend on events like next week.
Heading into Scotland, before the event started, Ricky Fowler was very much the favourite. He got himself into a terrific position, even going into the final day, even though he was a little bit off the pace. he was expected to go on and win. He had an incredible moment on the Saturday, hit a 458-yard drive off the 10th tee. That's because of the running fairways. Is he going to be a little bit disappointed that he didn't win? I know there's a lot of players. I know he didn't start the final day in front. Is he going to be disappointed he didn't win again at Gullen?
A little bit, maybe, but he'll take it all in his stride, and he's warming up for next week, like all the top world-class players are, and I really fancy his chances. Three times a runner-up in majors already. He's got the class.
Has he got what we say in horse racing circles, the time form squiggle, which means that he might just lack that little bit of bottle? Am I being unfair? I've spoke to Robert Lee about Ricky Fowler, and he says he will win an Open Championship. He loves Lynx Golf. He will win a major, but he's put himself in position a number of occasions and he hasn't done it yet.
No, he's got a very strong mind. I don't think he's got lack of bottle. I think he's got it there. It's just the circumstances have to be right. And of course, as we know, he's got to hold the vital parts at the right time.
He's got the imagination, hasn't he, for Lynx Golf? Some of the shots that we saw over the course of this week. And it seems to be fairly important if you want to bid for an Open win to play in either Ireland or Scotland. We talked about the fact that the courses were set up differently, but just to get you in the mindset of Open Championship golf, do you expect over the next few years more Americans to play? I mean, the field is pretty good anyway. It's a Rolex Series event, but it does seem to be key that you rock up in one of these events ahead of your Open tilt.
Yeah, it depends on your game plan, your intentions for the entire season, really. And Ricky Fowler loves playing Lynx golf, and that's a great key for him.
Brandon Stone then was the winner. He began the final round three shots off the lead, but as we've mentioned already, he was brilliant during that final day on Sunday. He covered the front nine in 31, picking up birdies on the 10th, 12th, 14th and 15th before curling in that eagle putt, as we've mentioned, from 30 feet on the par 5 16th to set up his shot at history. Now then, what do you think he was thinking? Obviously, he knew it was a 59. The whole galleries knew that it was potentially a 59 as well. Why is it that no one can shoot 59 on the European Tour, Kim?
It's like the old four-minute mile, wasn't it, until Roger Bannister did it. And after that, there was a floodgate opening. It's just a psychological barrier, and that's it.
28 players, 29 60s all told, because as you pointed out ahead of us coming on air, Darren Clarke has posted a 60 twice. I mean, we've seen on the PGA Tour 59s, we've seen a 58 as well, I think, haven't we?
Yes, we have.
It's one of those odd things. Have we seen a 59 on the European Challenge Tour?
Yes, we have. Nicolai Ravano and, a long time ago, Adrian Mauch.
Yeah, Adrian Mauch, the Frenchman with that 59 first and foremost on the Challenge Tour. How long will it be before we see a 59 on the European Tour proper, do you think?
Well, with courses like Gullen on the schedule, I think it's not going to be long. It's a par 70, of course, so it's only 10 under par. 11 under par is the best this season.
Brandon Stone wins the event, Rolex Series, obviously fantastic for him, and he gets into the Open Championship as well. When do you think he's going to sit down and think, crikey, I had a shot at a 59 then? Because at the moment, he's going to be buzzing off the tournament win and the fact that he's playing at Carnoustie this week. Is it going to be a few weeks before he looks back and think, oh my God, 59, I could have shot first 59 in the European Tour?
Yeah, he'd probably wake up sweating in the middle of the night thinking about it on a couple of nights. But, you know, he had a shot at it. He didn't wilt at the end, did he? The pressure didn't get to him. He played with a certain freedom and went for it, which I was really pleased to see.
Time to hear from the winner, Brandon Stone, who told our reporter Mark Tompkins that the key to victory was a change of putter after finishing tied 69th in Ireland last week.
Really surreal. I think last year to 18 months have been a real struggle. Haven't really had the results that I've been looking after, but the games felt good and the games felt close. And the six-hour journey from the Irish Open last week to here, my caddy team managed to convince me to go back to the good old blade putter, the Ping Dale, so put it in the bag and just putted phenomenally the entire week. It really was spectacular on the greens. Hit it nicely today. And any time that you shoot a 60, you know you haven't done anything too badly.
And of course, you were standing over a putt for 59 and 18 as well. How did that feel?
It felt incredible. I've had that opportunity once before and I didn't convert it, so it's becoming a little bit of a nuisance. I need to work on that. Just coming down the stretch when you're going for 59s, just haven't really pulled through, but I'll settle for winning the Scottish Open this week.
It's become a bit of a nuisance, just failing to get 59. Crikey, he is some player. It was his third European Tour victory in his 89th appearance following wins in the 2016 BMW SA Open hosted by the city of Ekurhuleni and the 2017 Alfred Dunhill Championship. That was also in South Africa. This is a massive plus for him, isn't it? Because you mentioned previously, first win in Europe rather than in his home nation, and that's going to give him a lot of confidence that he can do it again in the big events in Europe and potentially America.
Definitely. I mean, over the years, the South Africans have been the global travellers, haven't they? And they've had to get used to playing abroad. But this is psychologically very important for him.
Well, in terms of the Race to Dubai rankings presented by Rolex, he is up 130 places. He was 144th, and now he is up to 14th. Let's get a bit of social media reaction as well. This is from Richie Ramsey, who missed the cut. He tweeted, "Congrats, Brandon Stone. What a way to win in style. Fantastic week. Well done, Scottish Open volunteers and members of Gullen giving up the course." Stephen Gallagher, who finished tied ninth, posted, "Thanks very much to AS Investments UK for a brilliant Scottish Open once again. Gullen Golf Club course was mint. Fans were brilliant. Worthy winner in Brandon Stone. The whiskey is on you, pal." And Michael Balderstone, South African golf coach, tweeted this about Stone. 2018 record before this week, missed 9 out of 16 cuts. Best finish of tied 22nd. Great perseverance through a tough period. Well done, Pebbles. I'm sure he enjoys his nickname being called out. Champions fail too, folks. The struggle is real. The grind is essential. Just goes to show for me that although he's not had the best of seasons prior to his win, there is so much talent on the European Tour. And as Michael has intimated there, it's such a fine line between success and failure, isn't it, when it comes to the cream of European golf?
Oh, absolutely. And such a depth of talent in South Africa these days. I mean, there's a young man called Hovan Rubula, just won the Amateur Championship, Early Els's nephew. Look out for that name.
That is a name to look out for. We will keep our eyes peeled for that one. The runner-up at Gullen was England's Eddie Pepperell, whose disappointment at not winning was softened by earning a spot in the Open.
Yeah, so, you know, every cloud. Disappointing, obviously. Looked for a long time there on the course that I was ahead and switched quickly at the end. And, yeah, Brandon's gone crazy. But, no, listen, good round. And, yeah, you know, the added bonus of being in the Open is always special. You know, I played my first one at St Andrews in 15 and ended up hitting the hotel. So God knows what I'm going to hit next week.
He's going to be interesting to watch, Eddie. Interesting to read his blog and keep in touch with his tweets as well. He owns a Vizsla as well called Gus, and I'm a big Vizsla fan. I like Eddie. I'm a bit disappointed for him because I would have preferred, I've got to be honest here, I would have preferred Eddie to win than Brandon, but Brandon's a great champion. But, you know, Eddie's a good player, isn't he? He's had peaks and troughs in his career already, but he's going to come back stronger, I think.
He used to be a streaky player, but now he's really mellowing well and enjoying his golf a lot more. And as I said, he has a great fan base of loyal fans, and that's always handy to have that behind you.
Yeah, we'll look out for Eddie at Carnoustie, certainly. The third Open place up for grabs went to Sweden's Jens Dantorp, who picked Trevor Immelman for the spot by virtue of being higher in the official world golf rankings. Dantorp spoke with our reporter Mark Tompkins after his 2-under-par final round 68.
Yeah, well, I did my best today. I missed a couple of good chances out there, and but I'm pretty proud of myself to pull a final round under par together and finish top three, so that was nice.
You've got yourself into the Open Championship at Carnoustie next week. How exciting a prospect is that?
Yeah, I just heard it, and I'm really happy for that. That was the main goal for the week. Been having a couple of chances now in the Rolex Series the last couple of weeks, didn't pull that off, so it was nice to grab the last one, and looking forward for next week.
Couple of Challenge Tour wins for Jens Dantorp in his career, but this is obviously a big step up, and it's the best he's played, I think, on the European Tour. And again, getting into the Open, that's a nice consolation prize, as well as the cash, obviously, for Jens, who played well for the first three rounds, and I think maybe the pressure got to him a little on the Sunday.
Yeah, and a nice cheque to walk away with, too. He's pocketed over €300,000 and lots of points on the Race to Dubai, so that's a very good, important step for him to sort of feel a brick in his confidence wall, if you like.
Now, Trevor Immelman, who shot 65 on Sunday and shared third spot with Dantorp and American Luke List, will be at the Open next week, but commentating instead of competing. And although he won't be taking part, he just loves golf in the UK.
It's always great, you know, coming to the UK and playing golf over here. The crowds are so respectful, so knowledgeable. Not that they aren't anywhere else. But I think they understand, you know, the intricacies of links golf and how fiddly it can be and how tough certain shots can be, even though they look quite simple on your screen. And so, you know, it's always fun. And I've enjoyed all the events I've played this year out in the Middle East to start the season. And obviously the BMW at Wentworth and all these Rolex Series events are just really such a treat for us European Tour players. So it's great to be a part of them.
We hear him a lot in the commentary box these days. I don't want to lose him completely to TV and radio because he's only 38. He's had a fantastic career already and he plays links golf very well. It's a shame he's not going to be on the fairways. Well, he will be, but commentating. But great to see him up on the leaderboard once again.
I think he's just a class act, isn't he? The former Masters winner. And he never really kicked on in the way that perhaps people expected from Trevor. But he's, a classy golfer and good to see him contending again.
We need the top 10 from the Aberdeen Standard Investments Scottish Open. Kim, all yours.
Brandon Stone, of course, the champion. Eddie Pepperell alone in second. Three men tied third. Dan Torp, Immelman and Luke List from America. Tied sixth, danger man Ricky Fowler. Ryan Fox running hot. And Thomas Peters, the tall Belgian. Tied ninth, Dean Burmester from South Africa. Stephen Gallagher, as we said. Tyrrell Hatton, Ryder Cup man. And Aaron Rye and Justin Rose there, tied ninth. That is the top ten.
Last week's predictions, unfortunately, we have to do this every single week where we pour over what happened with our selections. Unfortunately, my two picks both missed the cut, Peter Uihlein and Mikko Ilonen. I was very much below par last week. Robert Lee, on the other hand, managed to pick up 5 points for the challenge between the presenter and co-presenter. He picked out Justin Rose, who was tied ninth. Graham McDowell, who was 63rd. Don't get any points for that. So Rob got five, and it means that the scores are like this. The presenters, which is sort of me and Rob, and co-presenters, which is everybody else and Rob occasionally, it's 95-60. So it's getting tight. So the pressure is on you, Kim, to get some points for the co-presenters, and we'll get to your picks for the Open shortly. Moving on, and in the fantasy race to Dubai game, Marco Mannucci is top of the overall global standings, while Craig Comsey-Ingham got the most points last week. In the Race to Dubai Show mini league, Chris Coles again leads the way, but it's congratulations to Emma Roberts, who got the most points from the Aberdeen Standard Investment Scottish Open with Gonzalo Fernandez Castaño as captain. That was a fair pick to get you some points from Gonzo. Now, the Aberdeen Standard Investment Scottish Open was the last Rolex Series event of the year. So how do the top 10 in the Race to Dubai standings look now?
Well, at number 10, it's Tyrrell Hatton. Ryan Fox is next. In 9, John Rahm, the big Spaniard. Number 8, Torbjörn Olesen, a man who shot 61 this season. Number 7, Rory McIlroy at 6. Russell Knox at 5. Francesco Molinari, he's playing so well at the moment, in 4th. Tommy Fleetwood, number 3. Alex Noren, the Swede, number 2. Top of the pile, Masters champion, Patrick Reed.
So those are the top 10 players in the Race to Dubai standings. What about the Ryder Cup rankings? We are getting ever closer to the action at Le Golf National. Kim?
Well, they're taken, of course, from the world points list and European points list. Firstly, the world, Francesco Molinari, number 4, Fleetwood, number 3, Rose, 2, Hatton, number 1. On the European list is Paul Casey, McIlroy, Alex Noren, and the Spaniard, John Rahm.
I asked Robert Lee this last week, and he just would not answer the question. I asked him who he would take that's currently not qualified for the European Tour. Would he be looking at a Thomas Peters? Would he be looking at a Russell Knox? And he would not answer me. Ian Poulter as well, who's not in the eight at the moment. What do players like that have to do? Who would you take? I know there's 4 picks, but who would you take? Maybe one or two players that you would have on your team at the moment that haven't qualified or are not in the standings at the minute.
I would take Sergio Garcia.
Yeah.
The passion, the pride, and to roust up the players in the matches. I would take Russell Knox, because although he's experienced, he's dying to play in the Ryder Cup and would be a great addition. They're my 2 picks. That definitely...
It's difficult. It's going to be difficult for Thomas Bjorn, isn't it? Because there's a number of players like that that are outside the top 8 at the moment. He might want street fighters like Poulter in the side. He's won on the PGA Tour this year. He's bubbled around leaderboards in Europe as well. You know, it's going to be a difficult choice for him. I know that all the captains want 4 picks, but sometimes it makes it harder.
For me, Ian Poulter is just a stretch too far.
He's got to maybe play well this week.
Yeah.
He's got to do something between now and the cutoff point. It will be interesting to see what Thomas does. Other news next on the PGA Tour. Michael Kim dominated the John Deere Classic in Illinois, winning by 8 strokes, finishing on 27 under par, which earns him a place at Carnoustie. Francesco Molinari continued his fine form, finishing in a tie for second. Sebastian Söderberg claimed his second European Challenge Tour victory by winning the Italian Challenge presented by Cashback World in Sardinia by a stroke after carding a 6 under par final round of 65. On the Stayshore Tour, Stephen Dodd won the Winston Golf Senior Open by 6 shots on his 52nd birthday at Winston Links course in Vorbeck, Germany. And Laura Davis won the first US Senior Women's Open by 10 shots at Chicago Golf Club. It's her first victory for 8 years. Top 10 in the world. Can't imagine there's that many changes, if any. How do we list them?
There are no changes since last week. There are three Brits in the top 10. The first of them, Tommy Fleetwood in number 10, Jason Day number 9, McIlroy 8, Ricky Fowler at 7, Jordan Spieth at 6, John Rahm at 5, Brooks Koepka at 4, Justin Rose 3, Justin Thomas at 2, and DJ Dustin Johnson reigns supreme number 1.
Let's whet the appetite now, shall we, for the 147th Open Championship at Carnoustie. The last three times it was held there, the winner was determined by a playoff. In 2007, it was Padraig Harrington who beat Sergio Garcia. In 99, who will ever forget Paul Laurie beating Justin Leonard and Jean van der Velde, who, of course, took the socks and shoes off, was in the Barry Byrne. And in 1975, Tom Watson was the winner in his Open debut after beating Jack Newton in an 18-hole playoff. Let's go back to the 70s. What do you remember about Tom Watson's win, Kim?
Well, it was a terrific win over Newton. 18-hole playoff. Those were the days,
Those were the days. Crikey, O'Reilly.
But Watson, of course, supreme. Newton, the golden boy from Australia. Everyone was rooting for him in a way, but what a clash of characters that was.
What about Paul Laurie's win? Did he come from 10 off the pace? Was it at halfway or even at the final round? I mean, the conditions were brutal. That was when Carnoustie really was Carnasty, wasn't it?
Yeah. You wouldn't recognise that 18th hole now, the one that van der Velde faltered on, met his Waterloo, if you like.
Mm.
Strange choice for a second shot he played there, that long iron from that right-hand side. He could have just laid up with a 9-iron and then chopped it on from there. The thing I remember most of all was him holding a putt up and downing it for a 7 to get into the playoff.
I mean, he's made his reputation off that and he's very philosophical about it, but in the weeks afterwards, he must have thought, how on earth did I not win the Open Championship? I mean, it was phenomenal that he couldn't get the job done, one hole to play.
Well, in this game of golf, if you were to name the most famous losers, it would have to be van der Velde and Doug Sanders, wouldn't it?
Oh, Doug Sanders, all those years ago as well. Van der Velde was beaten by Paul Laurie and Justin Leonard into that playoff. Let's not forget, Justin Leonard was probably the favourite. Paul Laurie, initially, I thought, didn't get enough credit. He does now because he won that playoff fair and square. And the way that he came through the field in awful conditions, I mean, he proved what a great links performer he was.
Well, he did it twice as a double whammy. Great last round and win the playoff. You can't do much more than that.
What about Harrington's success? I remember Sergio Garcia had a putt to win it. Unfortunately, it slid by and you could almost see the sort of blood drain from him. And he thought, crikey, this is another one gone. That was when Harrington was very much in his pomp and he managed to win a few majors on top of that Open champion. I felt so much for Sergio. That was such a big chance for him, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think the sentimental vote was very much with Sergio. You know, at the time, one of the greatest players never to have won a major. He's changed that since then, of course, at the Masters.
So Sergio Garcia beaten by Padraig Harrington back in 2007. We will get, Kim, your thoughts on the market principle, so to speak, for this year's tournament at Carnoustie. We'll have a chat about the course as well. Ahead of that, though, let's hear from Ricky Fowler and find out what the American made of Carnoustie after a recent practice round.
Course is great. I got to see it on a pretty mellow day, not a whole lot of wind. Tee to green, it's very fast and dry, which is how it should be. Course is perfect shape. There's not too many tricks to the greens. All the tough parts seem pretty much getting the ball on the green. So tee shots are very demanding, especially when you need to hit driver. Even the iron shots off tees. I think it suits it, you know, perfectly. I love hitting shots. I love using my creativity. You know, this is a place that allows you to play the ball in the air if you want to. You can still play the ball on the ground and hit shots in the green. So I'm looking forward to getting here, you know, next week.
It's going to be interesting. If the wind blows, it could be very, very different. I don't think there's forecast too much wind. There's forecast a little bit of rain on the Friday, potentially. But the fairways are going to run fast. I've heard one or two reports suggesting that, you know, the fairways could be faster than the greens. I'm not quite sure that's going to be the case. But the weather is the key thing, isn't it, when it comes to Open Championship venues, and Carnoustie in particular?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the last few holes are real tough. I remember Andres Romero imploding over the last few holes at Carnoustie the last time around. I think the weather's going to be pretty fair this year. The wind is not meant to get up too strongly, and it's all about keeping the ball in the fairway, out of the rough, and that's why I fancy Ricky Fowler so much, because he alluded to it there. Shot-making, creativity, he used that word, and I like him for that.
Are the big hitters going to have any sort of advantage, do you think? We've seen in previous US Opens, not so much this year, but certainly the previous two, that they can hit it out there with no real fear. Is it going to be a course that favours accurate players? How do you see it? Maybe from an American standpoint here, because we get the bombers come over and DJ's going to just try and take various bunkers out of play and just, you know, try and get it closer to the hole as he can. He knows that he's got so much power off the tee. Is it going to be a bombers course, or you got to plot your way around?
More of a plotting course than a bomber's course, particularly as the fairways are running so hard, it's easy to run out of room on the fairways, either into bunkers or into rough. So I don't think length will be an advantage, except, of course, on the longer holes, like the par fives.
What have you made of Dustin Johnson's season so far? He won the St. Jude Classic, of course. He was third in the US Open. I thought he should have won the US Open, had that awful round 77 on the Saturday when conditions were all over the place. He's gone close before, hasn't he, to an Open Championship win?
He certainly has. He missed out at St. George's with that sort of strange shot on that par five coming home, I remember, a few years back. But you can't rule him out. He's 11-1 with the bookmakers. He's won 18 times on the US Tour. I think he's got to have a chance, although I don't fancy him for this one, funnily enough.
Amongst the favourites, inevitably, is Rory McIlroy. What have you made of Rory's game over the course of the year? He won at Bay Hill. Of course, he's been a little bit in and out. Is putting still the problem with Rory? And is that going to be a factor at Carnoustie?
I don't think the putting is so much of a problem with him. It's just getting his head straight, I think. He's getting his head settled in the round of golf itself. He's striking it pretty well at the moment. I fancy his chances, but I don't think he's going to win, though.
John Rahm can get a little hot-headed on the course. I'm never quite sure that's the right mindset when it comes to links golf, because you can get bad bounces, bad breaks. You've got to be disciplined in your mind as well as your game. But having said that, he's got so much power. He's always competitive everywhere. We can't rule him out, can we?
We can't rule him out. The great thing about John Rahm, I think, is composure, because he will, I know that's strange to say that, but when he does lose his temper, it's over with in a moment. And he completely recovers straight away. It gets it out of his system, but it doesn't cost him.
Speaking of composure, when we look back to last year and what Jordan Spieth did when he took all the time in the world, and you know, because it was going pear-shaped for him, wasn't it? And for a young man to have the presence of mind to do what he did and use his caddy to get back on track, I mean, it was one of the moments of the Open, because it lasted for so long before he took his shot. But it was an extraordinary win, wasn't it, last year? I know he's not had a great 12 months since, but he's such a talented young man.
Oh, amazing. I was doing that three-hole channel last year of 12, 13 and 14. They were my holes to cover. So we had the entire coverage of that incident. And the fact is, as you say, he kept his composure. He knew exactly what he was doing, getting a free drop, using the caddy as a marker. OK, he dropped a shot, but immediately, if you remember, he birdied the next, the par three down the hill. Fantastic.
Henrik Stenson is another former champion. He's had one or two injury issues recently. He was meant to play in Scotland. He didn't. Is he going to be fit enough to play? Can he win once again?
He's in the field. He can win, but I don't think he's quite right.
So Henrik Stenson, it's going to be interesting to see how he performs. Likewise, another former Open champion, Tiger Woods, who returns this year after missing the last two. Before that, in 2015, he missed the cut, but the last time it was at Carnoustie in 2007, he finished in a share of 12th place. So what does he remember about the course?
Carnoustie, you have to drive the ball well. It's a pretty narrow piece of property, and as we all know, the winds can blow all different directions there, and you got to be able to keep the ball low. But also, then again, when it turns downwind, you got to be able to hit it sky high. And so, you know, thank goodness I've played a Scottish Open, a British Open there, and so familiar with the place.
Fourth in the Quicken Loans National last time out. He missed the cut in the US Open. He was second to Paul Casey in the Valspar Championship. On the face of it, he's put up pretty good numbers over 2018. But this is Tiger Woods we're talking about. There's always a lot more expectation. People are suggesting that he is going to win a major sooner rather than later. What's your take on Woods this week and Woods' season in general?
He's on his way back. He's getting his head together. If he can get four good rounds together, then obviously he's got a chance. I doubt that, though. I think we'll see him get two really good rounds and maybe two indifferent rounds. That's what I see from Tiger.
I know he's changed as a golfer, obviously. Has he changed as a person as well? He seems to be coming across as a more personable competitor and maybe not as tetchy and standoffish as he was a few years ago.
Yeah, he's more at ease with himself these days. He's mellowed. He's more of a communicator these days in an honest way as opposed to a corporate way, if you know what I mean.
Let's talk about one or two of the European players that we hope will be up on the leaderboards on Sunday before we get some selections. Tommy Fleetwood, he has gone close to winning a major championship. He seems to do very well in the US Open. Can he compete? Can he contend here? There was a lot of pressure on him last year, wasn't there? I'm not going to say he's gone under the radar this year because he's won again and he's always towards the top of the leaderboard in both events in Europe and in America. Your thoughts on Tommy?
Very strong mind. He's a seaside golfer. He comes from the Lancashire coastline, so he knows how to play these courses. I think he's got a very good chance this week.
Rafa Cabrera Bello won in Scotland last year. He has divided his time between Europe and America. And again, he's a player that you would have thought should be able to compete.
Yeah, I would say he's got a good chance. Swinging back and forth across the Atlantic, I'm not sure about that, whether that's going to be a factor for him. But he's a classy golfer and he's definitely going to have a chance.
Arguably, the form player in world golf at the moment is Francesco Molinari. He won at Wentworth. He won in Maryland a couple of starts ago. He's picked up a couple of second places as well. Has he got the links game, though, Kim?
Runner-up last week as well, of course, at the Quicken Loans. He's got the game because he's a metronomic swinger, so he's very accurate. The big key with him is his putting has come together, so he's holing putts. He was always almost famous for not holing enough putts, but now he currently is, so he could do well, where length doesn't really matter very much this week at Carnoustie.
Is it a little bit of a negative that he's not played links golf either in Ireland or in Scotland in the run-up? He decided to stay in America, or it doesn't really matter because he's playing well anyway? What's your take on that?
Well, he doesn't hit the ball particularly high, so he can play the low shots when he needs to on links golf, and he's unerringly accurate with his irons, so I think he's got a great chance.
Finally, I'm going to throw out you. Padraig Harrington obviously won at Carnoustie back in 2007. There's just been one or two signs recently that he's playing better than he has done in previous years.
It's true. Great experience and composure. He'll be trying very hard, as always. Never underestimate Padraig Harrington, but I think it's a stretch too far against the world-class field now.
Yeah, maybe just gone over the wrong side, hasn't he, Harrington? OK, let's get some selections then. We need two from your good self, Kim. I'll allow you one American and one European. Who'd you like this week for the 147th Open Championship?
I will go for the person I think is the best golfer at the moment not to have won a major. The man we heard from earlier on, Ricky Fowler.
Ricky Fowler's your American pick. What about one from this continent?
Can I go safe?
You can go safe. So you can go for anyone you like.
OK, I will go for Molinari.
OK, Molinari, the man who's in brilliant form. I'm going to hope that Rory McIlroy gets it together this week. He's a former Open winner, as we know. He's not had the best of seasons, even though he won at Bay Hill. I don't think it's going to take too much for him to go well. And Dustin Johnson, you mentioned that he's the bookmaker's favourite, so I'm not really taking any chances whatsoever from DJ. But having not got over the line in the US Open and maybe had one or two disappointing final rounds or certainly weekends of play this year, I'm hoping that DJ can win the Open for the first time. So those are our picks. Let's get some American selections now from US golf commentator Matt Adams. Matt, who'd you like this week at Carnoustie?
Well, off the top of the list, Dan, I actually agree with Kim's two picks, Francesco Molinari, who I've already backed this week, and Ricky Fowler, who's on good form, I think is a very good choice as well. I also backed Tiger Woods because the last time that Tiger played, he led in every significant statistical category except for putting because of the nature of links golf, because of the fact that you have to be ready for whatever weather conditions hit you here. The greens are going to be slower than what he's been playing on the PGA Tour, and I think that's going to help him come through the putts with a little bit more conviction and be able to turn that toe over a little bit more. So I actually think that if Tiger has a decent round putting, only decent, he doesn't have to be exceptional. He doesn't need to lead the field in this category like he did, as mentioned, the last time he played in every other important statistical category. I think Tiger Woods could surprise a lot of people. So he's another one that I would keep an eye on. I have a funny feeling about Peter Uihlein. He's back playing on the European Tour in a few tournaments. He played well out at the Scottish. I just feel like there's something brewing there and he may surprise us. Dustin Johnson, Brooks Koepka, how can you count them out week in and week out. But I also think Bubba is one that you have to keep an eye on, because he's winning again with regularity on the PGA Tour this year already with three under his belt. When he gets the artistic Bubba playing instead of the one that's fighting numbers, then I think that's the Bubba that can close out big events. And there is the possibility that if he allows his club to be a brushstroke here, that you could see Bubba Watson walk away with the claret jug. So I know I threw a lot at you, but first and foremost, if I had to boil it down to the number one player that I think would win it, I'd still think that Francesco Molinari is a very good pick. But as you asked for American contenders, I would put Ricky amongst them and those other names.
Yeah, well, you look, we like it when you tip up European players. Don't worry about that. Francesco Molinari is arguably the best player on the planet at the moment, isn't he, Matt?
Yes, and the fact that he's proving it on globally on all sorts of different golf courses. I was a little bit surprised that he continued to march after it at the John Deere Classic last week. Grateful that he was there on the PGA Tour, certainly a player of the stature that he has acquired. But I wondered about how tired he's going to be as he heads over here and back to Carnoustie. Nonetheless, his form is good enough that I think we have to keep a very close eye on him, and I'm excited about the other names that are in the mix as always.
Many thanks to Matt Adams for his selections at Carnoustie. That is all for now. Next week, we will look back on the 147th Open Championship and look ahead to the Porsche European Open. Before that, you can stream or download the new podcast from the European Tour called Life on Tour, featuring in-depth interviews with some great characters, which so far include Tommy Fleetwood, Luke Donald, Billy Foster, and John McLaren. The series is available now on Acast, and you can also subscribe through the podcast app on your iPhone. But for now, from Kim Thomas...
Goodbye.
And from myself, Dan Roebuck, it is goodbye. Enjoy the Open. We'll see you next time.